Welcome to Every Dance here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Ted Fox. On today's show, later on, we will be talking to New York-based independent dance artist Belinda McGuire. But first up, no, sorry, I've got the wrong. Okay, we're going to be talking to Tara Blue from Calgary. She was formerly from Toronto, and we had her on our show in 1999. That's when we first started airing Evidence. So she's going to be coming on to talk about her career from the time she left Toronto to now in Calgary with her Blue Collar Theatre Group. But first up, we have online now Sylvie Bouchard. Are you there? Sylvie? Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now.
Okay, I have to talk nothing loud.
Okay, and Roshanik.
Hello.
Jaberi, and?
Vanessa Goodman.
Vanessa Goodman. Okay. Well, welcome all of you. And Sylvie, let's start with you. We're here to talk about Dusk Dances. It's that time of year again, and it'll be showing next week at Withrow Park. Now, let's get a short history of Dusk Dances. When was it founded? And just a bit of background.
Yeah, Dusk Dances was founded in 1993, and basically the reason why I began the festival was because I wanted to bring this art form that I love, which is dance, to the public, and realized that it was difficult sometimes for people to go and see dance in a theater if they had a family. You know, it could get expensive, or just people didn't really know the art form, so it was hard to take a leap and go to the theater. So I thought it'd be a good way to make a bridge, in a way, between dance artists and the public. And also, I was interested in for myself artistically, to doing pieces that were outside of the theater. So I thought to give an opportunity to other choreographers as well to create works just outside of the black box. And so that was the beginning of it. And of course, the very first show was done in Toronto in Trinity Bellwoods Park. And after I created the whole the whole show, it was during FIDA, which doesn't exist anymore, the festival, the French festival. But I of course thought, who's going to come to this show? I don't know, what have I created? And then of course quite a few people came, and there was extraordinary comment from the audience saying that a lot of them had never seen dance, and they were totally very, very happy to see it, and that they loved the show. So after that, it kind of gave me a hint that maybe this kind of festival, this kind of event was something that people wanted, and it's been going now for 17 years.
What I like about it is it introduces the public to dancers, independent dance artists that they know nothing about, and then they go away maybe with an appreciation of what actually is happening in the dance scene in Toronto, and where you've extended it to other cities too.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, how do you choose the dance groups that are going to in? I would imagine it has to be a lot on the content of the work, given that it has to have a broad appeal to all the different families and cultures that come to the parks.
Yeah, I try to make a program that is varied, both in style, in visions of dance, in cultural representation. Because I think that's really, like you're saying, what Dusk Dances is about is to let the audience have an in a little bit on different visions of dance that are happening both in Toronto and abroad. And I think that's the more varied, the better, in a way, for the program, so that they have a little taste of what's happening. So yes, we have a piece from Vancouver with the contingency plan this year, and it's our first year actually programming something from Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. And Vanessa's here too on that. And now, Roshanik or Vanessa first here, when you're in an in-park setting, do you choreograph specific to the park setting? And what about all the ambient sounds and exciting things that happen unexpectedly during a show like this? How do you guys work on that sort of?
Well, Jen? I can speak for my piece. I'm doing a traditional African piece with my partner Louis Cheyenne. We both choreographed the work. And so we took a trip to Africa several times, and that's kind of the setting in the villages. It's, you know, it's not in a theater. That's the natural setting where they do the dances and the rhythms and the drumming. So for us, it was a lot easier to transition the piece from a studio into a natural sort of environment with trees and grass. And so for us, it was very easy to adapt it that way.
This particular work that we've created for the show Strathcona High, it was actually set in a cabaret setting the first time that we performed it, and we thought it would be a perfect work to put outside because it had the element of a spring prom, and the work grew so much as soon as we took it outside because there was so many new options to explore with the environment and, as you said, the sounds of the area as well, the soundscape changing, and it's just such a wonderful place to work because you're inspired by your surroundings and all of a sudden there's new possibilities to integrate.
Sure, yes. I remember Sylvie seeing pieces like in which dogs became a prominent part of a piece, one with Sarah Porter, I remember, when it really did become a part, and children walk on and become part of the plays, and that just sort of nicely transforms, I think, from just watching a black box show.
Yeah, definitely. We had rainbows, I remember, and yeah, definitely dogs that bark at the right time, or yeah, and it brings audiences and artists together in a very beautiful way, and it also allows almost ghosts of all the pieces that have been done throughout the years to stay in the park for people to remember them long after. Just long after the fact, and that's quite magical.
Mm-hmm. Now, Roshanik, let's go into each piece here first, and then we'll have Sylvie go into the overview of the others. What is the theme, and what is this based on?
Well, this particular dance is called Bao, and it's from Guinea, West Africa. It's the ethnic group of the Toma people from the Boké region, which is the forest region in Guinea. And it's basically a rite of passage for young girls. So they transition from adolescence to adulthood, and so they have rhythms and dances that they perform in the villages. And this is one of the post-ceremonial dances that they do there. So this is basically the concept of the piece, and we started with a very interesting mass dance. So we wanted to recreate that whole village feel in the park, actually. So we're going to have live drums, and the dancers will be sort of interacting with the mask, and it's a whole ceremony and ritual that goes with it.
How would you describe the costumes and design and face makeup, etc.?
Well, very colorful.
It would be.
It's very colorful, beautiful African fabrics. Actually, we got our costumes made in Africa, which is very nice. And so, yeah, it's basically the same kind of feel that we're trying to recreate here that we experienced there. You know, we traveled around from one village to another, and it was quite the experience to see the dances and the rhythms performed. And practice the way they are. And so it was nice to be a spectator and to be a part of that and experience that, and we wanted to sort of in a small way try to recreate that for the audience here.
Sure. I find cultural dance unlike choreographed dance, but I mean, not to say cultural dance isn't, but there's something when I watch it that is almost coming out of the body spontaneously, celebration or things like that. And I suddenly wonder, when you use the word choreography, that's a term that then strikes me as the reverse, where somebody from outside is planting on the body.
Yeah, I mean, with I can say about African dance, I don't know if it's like that with all cultural dance.
No, I'm just using that as my experience.
But with African dance, I know that it's a lifestyle. It's, you know, the women in the villages when they're, you know, washing clothes, or they're cooking, or, you know, the men are going fishing, or whatever the case may be, but it's not a separate thing. It's not, okay, here's dance and music for entertainment, and then now we're going to go about our our day or our life, and it's not separate. So it's very very united. Rhythms are and dances are practiced all day long. It's a part of a lifestyle, basically.
Okay. And Vanessa?
Our work is Strathcona High, class of 56, and it's an exploration of, I guess, teenage excitement and experience through the 1950s. And we've created this work 2 years ago, and we've really had such a fabulous time working with it because, as I said earlier, we found new things every time we've performed it. And it's a bit of a quirky work. It's got a dance theater element to it, and there's a number of little surprises as you go through the piece, which I won't reveal right now.
It won't be a surprise.
Yeah. But we really found our inspiration through the music and helping us kind of dictate the emotions that we wanted to portray in terms of the emotional journey of the work and the rebellion that teenagers often go through. And we perhaps jump outside the 1950s notion of acceptable behavior, but we definitely have a good time doing it. And our costumes were sourced all at vintage stores. We have these incredible 1950s chiffon dresses that we worked very hard to find and also very hard to maintain. Mm-hmm. They're delicate fabrics, but they're wonderful to work in, and they just elevate the characters inside the piece. And all three of us have an individual character that we work with to explore the journey. Yes.
So you're recreating movement-wise, the pedestrian movement of teenagers at the time? I mean, was there certain movements, the way they walk and move then as opposed to now? And
yes, yeah. I would say we do, and also I think we exaggerate those movements as well. We go into an exaggeration of those, and it would be as if, how would you experience that from an emotional standpoint and how that would come out through the body. And each person has a different approach. Each character has a different approach to that. And one character is a little bit more conservative in terms of her upbringing, so she's a little bit more hesitant to join the party. And another character has the idea that she's a bad girl, but she's really still a good girl. So she's really playing with defining her emotional standpoint. And then there's the third character who is a little bit more zany and off the wall, and she. Definitely explores the quirky side of the experience.
What about your hairstyle?
Our hairstyles might change nightly, but...
So you're shaving your head.
Yeah. But definitely, you'll see us prim and proper at the beginning, and we might unravel.
Okay. Now, you call yourselves Contingency Plan. Where did that name come from, and who's a part of it?
So the Contingency Plan is actually Jane Osborne, myself, and Leah Wald, and we started the collective in 2008. And it actually started as a backup plan for our independent dance careers. We figured, well, we weren't on contracts. We wanted to explore working together and also create opportunities to work within the community in a different way. So we formed the collective and started writing grants and putting together productions, producing shows, and we've really enjoyed it. And it's become a real sounding board for our careers independently, and then also as a collective, we've really progressed within our own experience in dance.
Great. Now, Sylvie, there's three other groups on. Can you talk about them and what they are doing?
Yeah, we have the Throwdown Collective, which is Mairead Philgate, Brody Stevenson, and Zhenya Chernikov, who presented a piece at Withrow Park 2 years ago called One Couch, and they're coming back to present a piece called Box Set. And what they're working with together is a little bit of a combination of contemporary dance and quite a very physical and quite a bit of acrobatic as well. So they danced on a couch a couple of years ago, and now they've come back to dance on four big wooden boxes. So they do pretty much anything and everything with these boxes. Very physical, of course, and just great imagery. It's a little bit like three little men, just men and women, but three little men like moving boxes, and it's very speedy. So it could almost be like a computer game at some point. It's really, really exciting work. We also have Karen Kasia, who's doing a duet with Marie Philgate and Zhenya Chirikov. It's a duet called Eugene Walks with Grace, and Karen did this duet about 15 years ago on Alan Kasia and Aaron Deschudel. And Karen has readapted and redone this duet, adapted it for Dust Dances and for the dancers as well. She's put it in the space in hanging a net on a tree, representing a little bit this couple's house. It's a little slice of life of this couple, going a little bit into a semi-dark place, where what happens when maybe a person in a couple or the two people want to go towards something that may take them away from the couple, but then they come back together. So it's again a quite physical work. Karen works with contact improv, so a lot of lifts and such. And then we have a third work by Michael Caldwell that has a live musician, accordion, and singer. She has a long white dress, and there's dancers that come out of that dress, representing each a little bit of a character, impersonate maybe a part of this person. So it has definitely dance and theater aspect to it.
So it's quite an eclectic show indeed.
Yeah.
And now it's usually all your Dust Dances have a musical group or something happening as people come into the park?
Yeah, opening the show between 7 and 7:30, we have the Moonshiner's Daughter, which is a bluegrass band. They're fantastic. They played actually in Flesherton when we were there last year, and I've asked them to come over to Toronto to play.
They got a still in the park too, eh? So this 7 p.m. is when the whole thing starts with the Moonshiners and then goes into the dance performances.
Yes, that's right. And okay. We have Ryan Egan hosting the show. He hosted last year, mm-hmm. and he's coming back with his same character of a dance coach that that takes the audience through just through the journey from piece to piece.
Okay. Now, we should also mention Earl's Court Park, August 18th to 21st, and that's St. Clair West and Caledonia Road.
Yes.
There's another Dust Dances there. Very briefly, and Roshanik, you're in it.
I am.
Yes.
With Rowan Earl's Court.
Okay. And that's hosted by Ryan Egan, too.
Yeah, it is hosted by Ryan as well.
Okay. Are you doing, Roshanik, the same piece?
The same piece, yes.
The same piece. It's going to be interesting. You'll totally different audiences.
Yeah, and a different site, which is really neat.
Yeah. Okay. Who's, by the way, John Reed? I notice he's involved in this.
Yeah, John Reed is a young artist that has done so much. He's very, very involved with younger kids, with even younger kids especially, just an incredible mentor. And we do basically a youth commission in all of our parks besides Withrow. And John was somebody that our co-presenters, which is Art Start at Earl's Court Park, knew. And so they brought him in to work with kids from their program at Art Starts to do a piece for Dust Dances. And John works very closely with the kids, and he works with hip-hop mainly, and basically creates a piece with the kids.
Great. So, how can people find out more information about the Dust Dances?
www.dustdances.ca. We have a new website, and it can gives you information on all the different seasons. And we have a blog as well, and there's some videos that you can see on all of the Witrow pieces and on other interviews and such that have gone on during the season.
Great. And you guys, Vanessa, any websites that people can look on?
Our website is www.contingencyplan.ca.
Okay, and Raj?
It's www.roshanikjabari.com.
Great. Okay, and I'd like to thank everyone for coming on. And
thank
we're
going to
take a break now. And thanks, Sylvie. And we'll be back here on CIUT 89.5 FM.
This is CIUT 89.5 FM, the University of Toronto community radio station. Available across Canada on Star Choice National Satellite Service, Channel 826, and broadcasting worldwide at www.ciut.fm.
CIUT 89.5 FM brings you Free the Funk at the Gladstone Hotel, Thursday, August 25th from 8 p.m. Come dance while summer's still hot to the beats of CIUT's DJs Jason Palma, Dan Toner, Parkdale Funk, and many more. Tickets are $10 at the door. Check out CIUT.fm for more details. Come on, free the funk.
Thank you. I think you know what I'm talking about. Baby, our love is in a drought. So let's collect all those tears we cry and keep it alive. I know that it's just a passing thing. Girl, it ain't easy living. But if there's a fire that still burns inside, gotta keep it alive. Oh, keep it alive.
Hi, welcome back to Evidence here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Ted Farr.
I'm Samara Thompson.
And now we have Allison Cummings on the phone. Allison, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. Now, she's got a piece in the SummerWorks Festival, which runs August 4th to 14th, and she opens on Thursday, August the 4th, 7:30 p.m. at Theater Center. Now, Allison, let's start, go right into the piece. What piece are you doing? It's called Combat. Can you give us some info on it?
Yeah, our piece is called Combat, and it's a creation, like it's a collaborative creation between myself and theater maker Claire Calvin and writer Adam Underwood, and all the actors and dancers are also co-creating with it. So kind of like their ideas, they bring into the studio, and we sort of try to mesh them into the piece. It's a piece about conflict and our relationship to it as Westerners, the fact that it's going on as we speak and we're directly involved economically and everything else, but it is, you know, it's at, like, it always seems like an arm's length, like we live in our peaceful lives and we fight for our, you know, we fight against Rob Ford and stuff, but our country is actually in conflict in a part of the world. So we were trying to match our everyday life with the idea of the fact that our country's in combat.
Now, you're using the idea of combat, but illustrating it in a workplace setting. Why did you choose that setting?
I didn't choose it. Claire Calvin chose it because she felt like the workplace setting that we chose was a very, very mundane, what people would think of as a very mundane situation. And but what we decided was, like, within that mundane situation, which is a phone call center, basically, that there's hierarchies and there's competitions and there's people with whatever that they need to achieve within that. So within that, what seems to be very mundane and very ho-hum kind of situation, we built, the characters that were built, we gave them each a place, in that setting that would coincide with places that are in, like, conflict in a way. So basically, like, so we have five characters, and each character represents something that has to do with war. So one character is occupied territory, one character is diplomacy, one like ambitious diplomacy, one character is the balance of power. So do you know what I mean? Like, so each character has something to do with a competitive sort of place within that piece.
How did you go about developing the piece?
Well, Claire and I got in the room with the actors, and basically, like, I did some, like, choreographic improv with them, and Claire did a lot of theater improv with them, like, basically something she calls it open canvas. And so within that, they could go from normal to extreme. So normal day, every situation, which is where the phone call center came from, to a very, very extreme situation where it became like crazy, crazy warfare within what they were improvising. So we did that, and like characters started to develop. And with myself, it was there's a lot of movement characters, and then I started to create movement on them that are based on what I see as a, like, combative or military sort of motif, I guess you could say. So basically, they're like, it's a combat zone in a phone center.
And office gossip is prevalent?
Absolutely. Well, it's not actually office gossip, because, like, all the characters have every character has a conflict within their work zone, right? So they all have, like, not that they're glassing at each other, but they all have a goal. And the goal may not necessarily be to sell what they need to sell. It's more, all the goals are based on either occupying territory, getting ahead, owning more, or, you know what I mean? Or, like, taking people down, getting rising to the balance of power and taking power down and becoming the power. So all of their motifs are actually that. Because if you strip away all those things from a regular office, that is, like, we feel like that is actually people's
okay.
motive.
Well, it sounds like a really entertaining piece. I notice on your the picture you use is a toy soldier, and I remember that piece. That's when you handed our toy soldiers were handed to us as we came in. We had to place them on your body, so it was like a war zone on your own body for possession of your body.
Yes, different piece. Yes, that was a performance piece I did. And actually, it's funny, we do have toy soldiers involved in our piece, but it's not related at all. And I actually, when we did our photo shoot with Christy in the middle of them and stuff, and I actually was raising concern that it might be too close to the piece I did, like, years and years ago, and that people might relate them, but no, it's not. It's a very different piece. It's a very different, it's not. It's
not no, I know it's not, because they were sort of fighting over possession of your own body.
Yeah.
Anyway, so where do we get more information on this? Have you got a website?
We don't have a website. We do have, however, we're all over Facebook and Twitter and all that kind of stuff, but we are part of SummerWorks, so it's www.summerworks.ca.
Mm-hmm.
The show is called Combat. We have 6 shows within the festival week, and the whole festival is really great.
And yes, there's a heck of a lot of good. We've covered now about 5 of them, so
it's
great.
Fantastic.
Okay, well, thanks for coming on, Allison.
All right, thanks, Ted.
Okay, you are listening to Evidence. You're on CIUT 89.5 FM.
CIUT can now be heard on channel 946 through Rogers Digital Cable.
Do you like what you're hearing and want more of it? Check out our schedule at CIUT.FM. We have over 80 unique programs we're sure you'll love. We're listener-supported CIUT 89.5 FM.
Time, so hold on, rewind.
time I tried to make a sound, the words they were nowhere to be found. I saw you in a thumbnail photograph, wondered if you still knew how to laugh. I wish I could see, you'd probably be laughing back at me.
Welcome back to Evidence on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Ted Fox.
I'm Samara Thompson.
And online now is Tara Blue. Are you there, Tara?
Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, it's going just fine. Nice to hear your voice.
Long time.
Yeah, long time. So back in 1999, in fact, when the early days of the show, that was the first time you came on. And then you were on a few times. And then you left Toronto, and here you are from Calgary. Anyway, and Samara here, who's also from out that way.
Yeah, Alberta dancers everywhere.
Where are you from, Samara?
I'm originally from Edmonton, but I danced in Edmonton and Calgary and Lethbridge and Medicine Hat. So.
Right.
So,
let's get a little background of you like in Toronto and then what happened when you moved back.
Well, I mean, we had done blue-collar projects for 2 years prior to coming to Toronto, and I'm really grateful for the time that we had in Toronto. You know, dancing in Toronto, the community is really supportive, incredibly supportive, and, you know, everyone comes out. They take what you've got, and they take it seriously, and they consider it seriously, and it was really... It was really rewarding choreographing in Toronto. I mean, FIDA was amazing for us. We were really grateful for that. The coverage we got from that was great. And I fell in love and got married and went back to Calgary and had a child and continued blue collar from there. And it's been a really long, crazy trip. We went from producing a couple of dance-based musical theater pieces to doing open stage of urban dance, because urban dance really fit our mandate of dance of all backgrounds and styles and, you know, dance of the people. And urban dance fit that like a glove at the time, and then that morphed into the Simon Barry Jam Dance Festival. And from there, I got tapped to produce the City of Calgary's Lifestyle Urban Arts Festival. And so that was my life for about 4 years. And now it's come full circle. I don't know if you... I know Toronto's facing a huge funding crunch crisis. And so is Alberta. And so a lot of my involvement in producing urban dance is really going to take a back seat. But at the same time that happened, I got tapped from Alberta Theater Projects to choreograph The Wizard of Oz, which has always been my dream job. So it's all come around full circle, and I'm really grateful for the time we had in Toronto that really helped teach me some of the chops I needed to get to where I am now. So...
How do you find the dance scene in Calgary?
We're really lucky now. When I came back over the past, God, it's been 10 years now, we have a group of us sort of graduates of the dance degree program, or, you know, danced around the dance degree program at the University of Calgary. And we dance, you know, in various places around the country. I went off to Toronto. There's dancers. Helen Husack dances often in Ottawa and Montreal and Toronto and Vancouver. Davida Monk, originally from Ottawa, has come to Calgary. She's the artistic director of Dance Studio West now, and through her, there's a core group of dancers that dance all over the country as well with her, and we're really lucky. There's a group of us, there's a hardcore group of us that I could name 15 off the top of my head that we're dancers, we're producers, and we're supportive of each other. We're on each other's boards, and when I say supportive of each other, I mean not just, oh, I really support your work. It's, you know, let's have your meeting and let's help you get this done, and let's do our board meetings and let me help you with your financials and let's help set this up and let's help do this. And we, you know, we work on a regular basis together to build the community. So I've been really lucky to be a part of that. And we're all different backgrounds. Like, we're all multiple dance backgrounds. Rosanna Terracino is flamenco. Helen Husak is very contemporary. I'm much more dance theater. Anita Miotti is more theatrical in her dance. Alara Goliath is African slash funk slash modern. You know, we dance all styles. We take class together, but regardless of our styles, we really come together and work. So I'm really lucky to be a part of that in the community in Calgary, even with the funding cuts that we're facing and the challenges.
How much do you think Decidedly Jazz Dance Works, which has been around for a very long time, has shaped what audiences want to see in Calgary?
Well, I mean, they're huge. And the thing about DJD, and it's actually interesting you said that, one, because I owe a huge debt of gratitude to Vicki Adam Willis for so many things, not the least of which I know that she really had a hand in help suggesting to the universe that I get my dream job of choreographing for The Wizard of Oz. So I'm always indebted to her, and I love her work. Twofold, they've always encouraged the dancers, you know, Kim, everyone down at DJD. They are independent artists, so they're in and among the community. And on top of their company work, they're in and among the community. They are a huge part of the community, and they're making independent dance separate from DJD. And at the same time, there's quite a few of us that started. See, my first real serious training was with DJD. I was bound to determine I was going to be a DJD dancer. I loved the work. And that never happened. I started my own company instead. And, you know, I've got to tell you that DJD has been, and Vicki Willis has been, huge supporters of me and what I've been doing for the last 10 years. And I've always been eternally grateful to them. But now what we're also finding, which is really sweet for me, is that there's a few of us that have studied Vicki's traditional dance techniques, like the traditional DJD style, the style that's quote-unquote classic DJD. And we're getting a chance to revisit that in class and things, and we're finding it's much sweeter 20 years now than when we started, because, you know, like jazz, it does get better with time. You know, so DJD is huge on so many different levels, not just the obvious success that they had with their aesthetic, but also in the way that they are integrated in the community, and they are a huge part of the community. And, you know, and just their spirit of support, it makes a big difference. And I know they're going through huge challenges right now, and sometimes it is a challenge to be that successful in a particular style and to, you know, and where do you go from there? And I think Kim's been very successful in sort of forging an authentic direction that is hers, but comes from, you know, an authentic place of where DJD originated. So I'm really lucky to be a Calgary dancer. I just am.
Now, how many dance organizations are there in Calgary that support the dance community?
Well, there's DJD Alberta Ballet, there's Springboard Dance, there's Dancer Studio West, there's WNNM, One Yellow Rabbit, and Theater Junction both present dance. So that's seven right there. There's also Momo Dance, there's Calgary Contemporary Dance Theater, there's Calgary Urban Arts Festival Society, Blue Collar Dance, Solo Centric, and...
Wow.
Yeah, three left feet. And these are just the people that I work with on a regular basis.
It's really exploded.
It is, and it doesn't even include any of the really wonderful, Rosanna, Fiona. There's some wonderful flamenco going on. There's some neat showcases. There's always really important events like University of Calgary, Dance Montage, Main Stage, the program. You know, we're really lucky. I think having the dance degree program help anchor some things, and then just us having sort of kindred experiences, knowing what we had to do when we had to, like, try to futilely post posters up, like, the week before a show. I think everyone's been there. And knowing that we wanted to help other people not have to go through that and just surviving. And we all have that kind of spirit. You know, some things we just have. There is less of an infrastructure in Calgary than there is in Toronto. Both places are challenging. You know, they're just, every environment's got its own unique challenges, but I'm really glad that we do come together in Calgary, and we've got, you know, we've got a great camaraderie that I'm really grateful for.
There's the Alberta Dance Alliance, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alberta Dance Alliance. Bobby is amazing. She's, you know, been spending like 17 years, really, more than that, I think, like almost 20, really supporting dance on a personal level and on an advocacy level. She's really gone above and beyond. And we have these conversations all the time where sometimes with granting, it just feels like you're pounding your head against the wall, wanting people to get it. And I honestly think that we're just never going to get the funding that we need. Like, it's just never going to exist. You know, no, the government, you're just not going to get government funding to take care of what it is that you need. And so I think you have to redefine what your own personal definition of success is and figure it out from there. You know, there's going to be challenges. Having said that, with technology, it's a lot easier to really share and see what everyone else is doing, which is great.
How do you find the funding from the provincial and municipal governments?
Sigh
there. Oh, dear.
Oh, my God. Well, you guys are going through the same thing, aren't you? I mean, in Toronto.
Absolutely.
But it's not, you know, personally, the people that I work with at Alberta Foundation for the Arts and Calgary Arts Development Authority, like, the people that work there, they get it. They work hard, you know, and having done enough grants, knowing what kind of hard work they really do work hard to support the arts and represent the arts. You know, they work their butts off. They really, really do. But the reality is that there is a recession and there is a deficit, and the money that maybe 15 years ago was designated through gaming just to support all the arts and communities and stuff, like, two-thirds of that actually goes to support, like, schools and infrastructure and government, you know, and healthcare. And that is just the way it is. There is going to be, like, pretty much a third less funding for the arts next year than there was like 5 years, 4 years ago. And it just is the way it is. I mean, everyone's hurting.
Wow, that's a huge cut. I mean, I guess from the Ralph Klein days of lots of money, things have definitely changed.
But, I mean, even the Ralph Klein days, it really wasn't all that lots of money. It seemed like it because the community was smaller, perhaps, or there wasn't as much infrastructure. But, you know, like the Lougheed days, there was, but it's also timing, you know. You had emerging companies. You had Alberta Ballet moving to Calgary, mm-hmm, in the Lougheed days. You had One Yellow Rabbit, really decidedly jazz. That's Dancer Studio West. That's when they really, you know, began to take shape. And all these arts groups and other arts groups that aren't necessarily dance, including Calgary Opera, you know, they're larger than us organizations, but you need those. They are really supportive to us smaller groups in a lot of ways, providing rehearsal space, you know, Evergreen Community Studios. These places exist, and we can rent a small theater, or you know we can rent studios, or we can get help, and they're all really important, and everyone's hurting, you know. So, what do you do? Whining's not going to help. Saying give us more money is not going to help, because there's no money to give. You know, it's what are you going to fund? Are you going to fund a homeless shelter or the arts? And everyone's feeling it. You know.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we have technology now. We have things. There are things that are easier to get your work out that didn't exist 10 to 15 years ago. And you know, you guys know that better than in some cases we do. You know, technology is huge, and so you just keep an open mind and, you know, do what you love and keep an open mind about what your definition of success is, and
yeah.
Plug in, you know.
One thing I wanted to ask, is it Calgary that had an anti-burlesque movement going?
An anti-burlesque movement?
Yeah.
Really?
Where is it? Edmonton. Okay, something recently happened out west in which... There was sort of a change in the climate for burlesque, and I thought it was
really?
Calgary that was involved. Okay.
I'm going to have to check that, because I know
I'll have to check it. I'll have to go on
burlesque.
The web and see what part of the West this was happening.
Well, because, you know, I think our burlesque movement is brilliant in Calgary. And it is within itself its own community, and I'm really excited. I really enjoy it. So there's some rules on nudity.
And maybe that's what changed or something.
They're posing some of the rules.
I didn't know there was such a large community in Calgary.
It is. It is one of our biggest challenges is always communication. I mean, my website, bluecollardance.com, big thing I've got to do is update it, because you're so busy. And it's a big thing that we're really trying to wrap our heads around in Calgary. And some groups are doing it much more effectively than others. Pulse Studios, who is Tara Wilson, which is a dance studio, but they're much more than that. They're very connected into the hip-hop community. Tara Wilson is one of the pioneers that really brought hip-hop and urban dance to Calgary, and they're very effective with their communication, and that's something that a lot of us in the more contemporary dance theater groups can really sort of take a lesson to and learn from them. But communication is key, and a lot of us, it's one of the next challenges we're facing. I mean, we're so busy doing, we have to make sure that we're letting people know what we're doing while we're doing it, which is why programs like this are so great.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much, Tara, for coming on Every Dance.
It was great talking to you again.
Yeah, and Samara. And
it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for filling us in on what's happening at West.
And it's been a great chance to touch base with you guys. Toronto's always been sort of the mothership. So.
Jeez, hey, mothership, I like that. I don't know if does that make us the fathership of dance coverage. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks again, Tara.
Thanks. Have a great weekend.
I'd like to thank also Sylvie Bouchard, Festival Director of Dust Dances 2-11, which is taking place August 2nd to 7th, 7 p.m. at Withrow Park. And also Roshanik for doing tech, and also for coming on and talking about her work in Dust Dances, and Vanessa Goodman of Contingency Plan, who's also in Dust Dances at Withrow Park. Also, a multidisciplinary artist, Allison Cummings, about her show Combat, which is part of the SummerWorks Festival, taking place August 4th to 14th. And for more information on her work and all the others we covered in the last 2 weeks in SummerWorks, go to www.summerworks.ca. On next week's show, we will be having Yvonne Ng. She's the Artistic Director of Princess Productions, on their presentation of Dance Made in Canada, FAO Canada 2-11, which takes place August the 11th to 14th at the Betty Oliphant Theatre. And with her will be choreographer Michael Caldwell, who's a board member with the School of Toronto Dance Theatre and has a piece in Dance Made in Canada. And from Montreal, Lena Cruz, founder of Filia 13 Productions. Her work is really quirky, really fun, and really fantastic, in which she...